Good morning, and welcome to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilience and Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. Rick Hansen, PhD, is a psychologist and New York Times best-selling author. He's been invited to speak at NASA, Oxford, Stanford, Harvard, and meditation centers worldwide. His books are available in 28 languages and include Making Great Relationships, Hardwiring Happiness, Just One Thing, and Mother Nurture. His work has been featured on the BBC, CBS, NPR, and other major media. And now, Just One Thing. Is it worth it? The practice? See deep wants. Why? I did my PhD dissertation by videotaping 20 mother and toddler pairs and analyzing what happened when the mom offered an alternative to a problematic want. Not the chainsaw, sweetie. How about this red truck? Hundreds of bleary-eyed hours later, I found that offering alternatives reduced the child's negative emotions and increased cooperation with the parent. Pretty interesting, at least to me, both as a new parent and as someone desperate to finish grad school. And there's an even deeper lesson. Kids, and adults too, obviously want to get what they want from others. But more fundamentally, we want to know that others understand our wants. And even more fundamentally, they want to. Consider any significant relationship. Someone at work, a friend, or a family member. How does it feel when they misinterpret what you want? Or worse, when they couldn't care less about understanding what you want? Ouch! When you recognize the deeper wants of others, they feel seen and are less likely to be reactive. Plus, you've gained a lot of valuable information. And it becomes easier to ask them to do the same for you. This approach also gradually reveals the profound desires at the center of being. Each person must come to know these in his or her own way. These quintessential learnings of the heart are beyond language. Diffidently and with respect, I could offer three words. Fingers pointing at the moon, but not the moon itself, that are suggestive. To be conscious, free, and loving. For you, what are the deepest wants of all? How? With a friend or a stranger, look deeper behind the eyes, beneath the surface. You might sense a wish for pleasure, a commitment to others, a priority on security, a delight in life, a valuing of autonomy, or a need for love. Look down into your own core of being and into its longings, and you'll find many of the same wishes. They're just as powerful and precious to the other person as they are to you. Deep down, most wants are positive. This means to these ends may be misguided, but the fundamental ends themselves are usually good ones. Typically, even horrible behaviors are misguided efforts to gain positive things like pleasure, independence, recognition, control, or justice. Of course, this is not to justify these actions in any way, but grounding oneself in the truth, the whole truth, means seeing the whole picture, including the good intentions poignantly producing bad behavior. Try applying this to yourself regarding some act you regret. What positive aims did the act serve? What's it like to recognize this? For me, opening up to see the good aims underlying bad acts actually softens my defensiveness and helps move me to appropriate remorse and to greater resolve to find better ways to pursue those aims. It also cuts through harsh self-criticism and encourages self-compassion. Then, during an interaction with someone who is difficult for you, or while reflecting on the relationship as a whole, try to see the deeper wants of the other person behind the acts of thought, word, or deed that have bothered or hurt you. I suggest you don't do this if you tend to blame yourself when others mistreat you. You may not like how the other person is pursuing the deep want, but at least you can align with that want. All deep wants are positive. And if you like, try to figure out less harmful ways to fulfill it. Last, on the fly or at particularly quiet moments, open to listening to the soft murmurs of your own most fundamental wants. In what ways are you sincerely trying to fulfill them? Also, are there any of your deepest wants that it feels right to do more for? What would that look like concretely in everyday life? Imagine your deepest wants like a soft, warm current at your back, gently and powerfully carrying you forward along the road ahead. How would this feel? Where would this road lead? You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilience and Happiness from Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. And here's another, just one thing. Which wolf do you feed? The practice, feed the wolf of love. Why? I once heard a teaching story in which an elder, a grandmother, was asked what she had done to become so happy, so wise, so loved, and respected. She replied, "It's because I know that there are two wolves in my heart, a wolf of love and a wolf of hate. And I know that everything depends on which one I feed each day." This story always gives me the shivers when I think of it. Who among us does not have both a wolf of love and a wolf of hate in their heart? I know I do, including the wolf of hate, which shows up in small ways as well as large ones, such as when I get judgmental, irritable, pushy, or argumentative. Even if it's only inside my own mind, and sometimes it definitely leaks out. We've got these two wolves because we evolved them, because both wolves were needed to keep our ancestors alive. Until just 10,000 years ago, For millions of years, primates, hominids, and early humans lived in hunter-gatherer groups that bred mainly within the band while competing intensely with other bands for scarce resources. Therefore, genes got passed on that promoted better cooperation inside a band and better aggression between bands. The wolf of love and the wolf of hate are stitched into human DNA. Bands kept their distance from each other, and when they met, they often fought. For example, researchers have found that 12 to 15% of hunter-gatherer men died in conflicts between bands, compared to just the 1% of men who died in the many bloody wars of the 20th century. So it's natural to fear the stranger, who, back in the Stone Age, with no police around, was often a lethal threat. The related impulse to dehumanize and attack them also worked well in terms of passing on genes for millions of years. Today, you can observe the wolf of hate all around us in acts of thought, word, and deed. For example, as soon as we see others as not my tribe, whether it's at home or work or on the evening news, the wolf of hate lifts its head and looks around for danger. And then, if we feel at all threatened or mistreated or desperate, the wolf of hate jumps up and looks for someone to howl at or bite. While the wolf of hate was vital back in the Serengeti, today it breeds alienation and anger, ulcers and heart disease, and conflicts with others at home and work. And at a larger scale, with 8 billion people crowded together on this planet, when COVID can become a worldwide epidemic, when bank problems in Greece roil the global economy, when carbon emissions in one country heat up the whole world, when we fear or dehumanize or attack them, it usually comes back to harm us. How? So what are we going to do? We can't kill the wolf of hate because hating the wolf of hate just feeds us. Instead, we need to control this wolf and channel its fire into healthy forms of protection and assertiveness. And we need to stop feeding it with fear and anger. Meanwhile, we need to feed the wolf of love. This will make us stronger inside, more patient, less resentful, annoyed, or aggressive. We'll stay out of needless conflicts, treat people better, and be less of a threat to others. Then we'll also be in a stronger position to get treated better by them. There are lots of ways to feed the wolf of love. We can feed it by taking in the good of everyday experiences, of feeling seen, appreciated, cared about, even cherished and loved. We can feed the wolf of love by practicing compassion for ourselves and others, and by letting these experiences of compassion sink into our hearts. We can feed the wolf of love by recognizing the good in other people, and then by taking in the experience of the goodness in others. Similarly, we can feed the wolf of love by sensing the goodness inside our own hearts, and by letting that sense of truly being a good person, not a perfect person, but a good person, also sink in. Last, we can feed the wolf of love by seeing the good in the world and the good in the future that we can make together in the face of so many messages these days that are dark and despairing. We feed the wolf of love, in other words, with heart and with hope. And we feed this wolf by sustaining our sense of what's good in other people, what's good in ourselves, what's already good in our world, and what could be even better in a world we can build together. We need to stay strong to do this, to hold on to what we know to be true in spite of the brain's tendency to focus on threats and losses, and in spite of the age-old manipulations of various groups that play on fear and anger, that feed the wolf of hate to gain or to hold on to wealth and power. So let's stay strong and hold on to the good that exists all around us and inside us. Let's stay strong and hold on to the good that can be, that we can nourish and build in this world. Let's stay strong and hold on to each other. Let's stay strong enough to take in the good that feeds the wolf of love each day. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilience and Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. Do you believe in love? The practice, trust in love. Why? Take a breath right now and notice how abundant the air is, full of life-giving oxygen, offered freely by trees and other green growing things. You can't see air, but it's always available for you. Love is a lot like the air. It may be hard to see, but it's in you and all around you. In the press of life, dealing with hassles in personal relationships, and bombarded with news of war and other conflicts, it's easy to lose sight of love and feel that you can't place your faith in it. But in fact, to summarize a comment from Gandhi, daily life is saturated with moments of cooperation and generosity between complete strangers, let alone with one's friends and family. Love is woven into your day because it's woven into your DNA. As our ancestors evolved over the last several million years, many scientists believe that love, broadly defined, has been the primary driving force behind the evolution of the brain. Bands of early humans that were particularly good at understanding and caring for each other outcompeted less cooperative and loving bands, and thereby passed on the genes of empathy, bonding, friendship, altruism, romance, compassion, and kindness. The genes, in a word, of love. Nonetheless, even though the resting state of your brain, its home base, when you are not stressed, in pain, or feeling threatened, is grounded in love, it's all too easy to be driven from home by something as small as a critical comment in a business meeting or a frown across the dinner table. Then we go off to a kind of inner homelessness, exiled for a time from our natural abode, caught up in the fear or anger that makes love seem like a mostly forgotten dream. After a while, this can become the new normal, So we call homelessness home. Like becoming habituated to breathing shallowly and forgetting the richness of air that would be available if we would only take a breath deeply. So we need to come home to love, to recognize and have confidence in the love in your own heart, which will energize and protect you, even when you must also be assertive with others. To see and have faith in the love in others, even when it's veiled or when it comes out in problematic ways. To trust in love that's as present as air. To trust in loving that's as natural as breathing. How? Take a breath. Notice how available air is, how you can trust in it. Notice the feeling of being able to rely on the air. Bring to mind someone who loves you. Feel the fact of this love, even if it is, to paraphrase John Wellwood, a perfect love flowing through an imperfect person. Can you feel your breath and body relaxing as you trust in this person's love for you? Can you feel your thoughts calming, your mood improving, and your heart opening to others? Let it sink in that trusting in love feels good and refuels you. Then, if you like, do the same reflection with other people who love you. Bring to mind someone you love. Feel the reality of your love. Know that you are loving. As in the paragraph just above, absorb the benefits of recognizing and trusting in your love. Try this with others whom you love. Scan back over your life and notice some of the many times when there was love in your heart, expressed one way or another, including generosity, kindness, patience, teamwork, self-restraint, affection, and caring. Appreciate as well that there have been many times when you wanted love, were looking for someone or something to love. Friends and good causes too, not just romantic partners. Or longed for more love in your life. These are facts and you can trust in them. Trusting in the lovingness of your heart. In situations, open to your own lovingness. Privately ask yourself questions like, as a loving person, what is important to me here? Trusting in love, what seems right to do? Remember that you can be strong and, if need be, create consequences for others while staying centered in love or one of its many expressions, such as empathy, fair play, goodwill. What happens when you assert yourself from a loving place? Tune into the lovingness of others, no matter how obscured by their own homelessness, their own fear or anger, like seeing a distant campfire through the trees. Sense the longing in people to be at peace in their relationships and to give and to get love. What happens in a challenging relationship when you stay in touch with this lovingness inside the other person? Notice that you can both feel the lovingness in others and be tough as nails about your own rights and needs. Don't sentimentalize love or be naive about it. Trusting in love does not mean assuming that someone will love you. It means confidence in the fundamentally loving nature of every person and in the wholesome power of your own lovingness to protect you and touch the heart of others. It means coming home, home by the hearth of love. You've been listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilience and Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful and loving rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona next.